What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 126. Today, we're going to be talking about foodborne illnesses and what caused them. And I think this might seem like a weird topic or all that type of stuff, but just imagine, just real quick, I'll paint a scenario. You go to lunch, you have a chicken salad, an hour later, you're sick. What is 99% of people going to blame it on? The chicken, right? I'm here to just say that that might not be the best thing and that might not be actually right. There are plenty of opportunities and plenty of chances for the green stuff in that salad, you know, the lettuce, kale, spinach, whatever's in there, to make you just as sick as any sort of uncooked chicken. So I think that's why we wanted to talk about this. You know, there's just to bring another angle, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because every time I hear somebody got food poisoning, like even me, like I'm just thinking like, oh, did you like eat some raw fish? Did you go out for sushi? Did you undercook your steak? Did you undercook something like that? So, like, I'm just always just trying to think that it's something to do with the meat, some problem to do with the meat. But looking into this study, it's from the CDC website. It's a really long study. It's looking at over 10 years of different foodborne illnesses and, like, all the causes and trying to track it. Honestly, this is a very difficult thing to do because nobody eats just chicken at a meal. Nobody eats just lettuce. You're always eating a combination of a bunch of different things. So narrowing it down to like one food is kind of difficult to do. The only time you can accurately do that is if there's an outbreak. Like, oh, hey, these 40 people went to the hospital and they had the same illness. Oh, these 40 people, the only thing that they ate in common was lettuce bought from this store. Like, that's how you can track it, or chicken bought from this store. That's the only time you can really track it, and it's really difficult to do. So a lot of the information I'm going to be talking about is based off of, like, very educated estimates. I mean, they're guesses, but they're educated guesses.
Yeah, if you're going to guess, that's the best guess to make, I guess.
Yeah, it's the best data we have. Like, yeah. There's no way, there's no 100% certainty in any of this, but... you know, you just kind of have to, you can find some trends and you can think of a lot of reasons why a lot of this information makes sense. So, first off, more than 9 million foodborne illnesses are caused in the United States every year. And that number is probably a lot greater than that because most of the time, you know, if you get some food sickness, like you're not going to go to the hospital, you're not going to go to your doctor. So you're not, it's underreported. So a lot of this is just estimates. So just from how many people get sick, about 51% come from plants. So we were talking about at the beginning how everybody thinks it's a meat. Nope. The first thing is most likely going to be some sort of plant, 51%. 42% comes from land animals. Land animals is going to be your chicken, beef, dairy would fit under land animals too. And 6% comes from aquatic animals, you know, your fish, your shellfish, stuff like that. So of these, leafy greens was the leading cause. So lettuce, spinach, kale, that caused 22% of the illnesses. Dairy was a close second at 14%. Fruits and nuts is 12%. And poultry at 10%. So dairy spoils pretty fast. So it's not uncommon for somebody to eat some dairy that's been spoiled and not really know about it. And a lot of people do have issues with dairy. So I think that's why that number is so high, is people don't really realize that they're lactose intolerant and they're still consuming a lot of dairy. I think that's why that number is as high as it is.
Well, and a lot of those symptoms would come back as like food poisoning. You know, if you're running to the bathroom, you know, you'd think you got sick from the meal. Yeah.
I mean, it's a pretty fine line between, like, a food sensitivity and, like, a food illness. Like, I don't really know where you draw the line. The symptom, like you said, the symptoms are about the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fruits and nuts and poultry. We'll get into details on that a little bit later on. So just illnesses, so far, leafy greens are the big bad guy. So let's talk about hospitalizations. So this changes up a little bit. So 46% of hospitalizations come from land animals, 41% from plants, and 6% aquatic animals. Aquatic animals staying strong at that 6%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So hospitalizations, dairy was the leading cause again. This one's at 16%, followed very closely by leafy greens, 14%. I mean, they're about the same. Poultry is at 12%. And buying stock vegetables is 10%. So I couldn't find a clear answer on what this study considered to be a buying stock vegetable. That's not a term I've ever come across before. So I had to like Google it and look across a couple other websites. So it seems like it's things like tomato, squash, cucumber, peppers, green beans, maybe some peas. I'll go into detail about why those foods are probably so high on this list as well. Even though tomatoes and squash aren't technically vegetables, I think in the, this study consider them to be vegetables. And then when you actually look at deaths, 43% was from land animals, 25% is from plants, and again, aquatic animals, that 6% number. 25% was just completely undetermined, and they couldn't figure out why these people died due to their food illness. So poultry was the leading cause at 19%, dairy at 10, vine stock vegetables at 7, fruits and nuts 6, and leafy greens 6%. So plants are most likely to get you sick, but it seems like if you get sick from an animal food, you're more likely to have a worse outcome.
I mean, that makes sense, because I mean, whatever's making an animal sick is going to be, what's the word, more like one-to-one, like the same operating system as what's actually capable of making humans sick compared to plants. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. Like, the pathogens from an animal should translate better to us.
Yes.
Than the pathogens that would be on a, like, infected broccoli, something
yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, same thing with nutrients. Yeah, same argument.
Yeah, exactly. So let's kind of break down why most of these foods are going to get you sick and what you can do to avoid it. So leafy greens, since they're number one, let's talk about them first. So they can be contaminated in several different ways. So dirty water or runoff from where the plants are grown. You know, like maybe there's still fertilizer on the food and they're not really cleaned properly. Or dirty processing equipment somewhere along the line. Or unhygienic preparation processes. 85% of the cases come from a restaurant or a catering service. So this could also be due to cross-contamination or sick employees. So when I'm thinking leafy greens, I'm thinking, oh, fast food, you're getting lettuce and a burger, some restaurant workers sick, something like that at your McDonald's, and isn't really taking good care of the lettuce. I mean, that seems like a very likely cause. Other things, like I do remember, I don't know, this was like 4 or 5 years ago, where you couldn't buy lettuce in a grocery store for a couple weeks because all that lettuce was contaminated due to E. coli.
Mm-hmm.
That's because of that dirty water runoff from where the plants were grown, and they didn't clean it properly. Most of the time, like you buy a bag of lettuce, it says, oh, it's been triple washed. Don't believe that. Wash that shit yourself, because there's so many cases of people getting E. coli from like bag lettuce that has been supposedly washed.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, honestly, I know people don't want to think about it when you go out to a public restaurant, but how many of those videos, we've all seen them online, of just some disgruntled employee doing something nasty to the food they eat. You know, that happens. And that type of stuff can make you sick, too.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you're talking about, like, you know, a fast food place. I mean, these people are making minimum wage or close to it. I'm sure they don't have the highest standards of keeping a clean work environment.
Mm-hmm.
If they're sick, I mean, can they even afford to not come to work?
Yeah.
Like, no, they're going to go to work sick. And especially when it comes to leafy greens, you're eating these things raw. So if you're cooking them, at least like heat would be able to kill a lot of these pathogens. But since you're just eating it raw, there's no heat, and whatever pathogens are on that food, you're going to consume. So like that's why leafy greens are so high on this list.
Yeah. And it's so funny how that would normally be considered like a healthy thing. just a normal like plant-based narrative, like, oh, a raw vegan diet would be considered a quote-unquote healthy diet, couldn't be farther from the truth.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about just how bad consuming like raw vegetables really is.
Yeah.
So the next one that was high up on this list was poultry. So when we're talking about poultry, we're really talking about two different foods. So most of the illnesses come from chicken, but the more serious outcomes happen to come from turkey deli meat. So 41 to 84% of raw chicken, I know that's a very big range, is contaminated with, it's called Campylobacter, and 4 to 5% is contaminated with Salmonella. So a very high amount of chicken is contaminated with some sort of pathogen. However, if you cook your food properly, these bacteria are easily killed off, so you don't really need to worry about it. So if you're getting contamination from chicken, most likely it's because there's some sort of cross-contamination occurring. Either you're using the same cutting board to cut your raw chicken or to season or marinate your raw chicken, and then you're cutting some like fruit or some vegetables on that same cutting board. Or you're using a spatula or something like that to flip your chicken that's still raw on one side, and then you're going to use that spatula to go touch something else. That's how most contamination with chicken occurs, is from just bad kitchen hygiene. So as long as you're not sharing surfaces, you're cleaning your utensils, using different utensils for the raw meat and the cooked meat, then you don't really have to worry about getting sick from chicken. So the serious outcomes when it comes to poultry are mostly tied to turkey deli meat. And these deaths come from a bacteria called Listeria. So 83% of the cases actually come from deli meat bought at the counter versus 17% come from prepackaged meat. And the cause for this is generally poor hygiene from the deli staff, poor cleaning practices, and or cross-contamination with equipment like the slicers and stuff like that. Again, if the employees at your deli aren't practicing like high hygiene standards, then you're going to have some sort of cross-contamination issue. Like, you can buy like raw like chicken wings at the same place that you can buy like, you know, your sliced turkey meat and stuff like that. So yeah, there's going to be some cross-contamination unless these people are spraying down, cleaning with ammonia all the time and stuff like that. While I'm specifically talking about turkey deli meat, the same risks apply to other types of deli meats as well. So the safest way to get deli meat is to buy it whole and slice it at home. Think of if you go and buy like a big salami log and you cut it at home yourself, you're good to go. Or just buy like the pre-sliced meat. It doesn't seem like it has that big of an issue.
That's funny though, because a lot of people would assume, and again, this is just like the optics of it, that getting deli meat directly from a butcher would be quote unquote healthier than deli meat in like a plastic container. You know what I mean? They're like, oh no, it's actually deli meat from the butcher. Like, it's better in some way.
Because it's fresher, I don't think that it's really fresher at all.
Yeah, and it's and like you said, I mean, these people are touching, not to knock on anyone who's working there, and not even like earlier to knock on people working in fast food places, but who has the mental, I guess, energy and discipline to wash your hands and wash your containers and change your gloves after every single purchase, meal, or preparation? Like, after, you know, 8 to 12 hours on a shift, it's normal to kind of be lax about those things, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And again, this is another profession where, hey, if you're sick, you're probably going to be going into work. You probably don't have a bunch of sick days that if you have, you know, a cold or the flu, you can just stay at home. You're probably going to be going to work anyway. So this is like just another time where that you could be getting sick from the employees, and it doesn't really have to do with the meat itself.
Mm-hmm.
Both of us don't really recommend deli meat anyway, because it's not the healthiest type of meat. But I am a big fan of salami, because I do think it's like a good choice for something if you like need a quick snack, or you want something that you can take with you to work or something on the go. I do think salami is a pretty good option. So I am a big fan of buying like the giant salami logs all the time.
Yeah, me too. I definitely, there's a lot of times where people just want just basic recommendations. You know, hey, what can I eat for on the go? I always say salami and literally cheese sticks. You can eat that. You can put it in a baggie. It'll stay good all day. And I don't see a problem with that.
Yeah, we've been consuming salted meat for, I don't know, as long as we figured out those two things go together.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that's We've been consuming it for a very long time, so I don't think it's something that we should, you know, completely stay away from.
Yeah, me either.
All right. So the next one, I'm glad you brought up the cheese sticks. That's a perfect tie into dairy. So I kind of disagreed with this data, but actually after I looked at a couple other studies, it kind of made more sense. So dairy, the cases with dairy are more likely to come from raw, unpasteurized milk or cheese. The pasteurization process does kill many pathogens. However, when you compare our data with raw milk compared to Europe and New Zealand, you get a very different outcome. So Europe, it doesn't seem like it's that big of an issue at all. And if you look at New Zealand with its raw dairy, it's not an issue. Like, they have zero cases. It's not a big deal at all. So it doesn't really seem like it's the fact that it's raw food. It's that there's something in our, like, processing of it that makes it so bad. So, again, this is another case where it's not the cow, it's the how.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think there could be some processes in the milk just production pathway that kind of the pasteurization allows them to be a little more lax and they can get away with it. But when it comes to processing raw milk, it can't get away with it. And maybe that's why it comes back more contaminated sometimes.
Yeah, and I think there's also some bias here as well. At the beginning of the podcast, is that a lot of these are just educated guesses. So if you go to your doctor and you list off 100 foods and one of those foods was raw dairy, you know, bingo right there. He's going to point the finger.
Exactly.
At that.
Yep. Yeah, very smart. Because whether they know it or not, that bias is put in them. That pasteurization is healthy and that raw dairy is dangerous.
Yeah, so like after I compared the data, looking at a study that was comparing our numbers to Europe's and New Zealand's numbers, you get a completely different outcome. So I'm just thinking this probably isn't as big of an issue as like our numbers really make it seem to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm on board with that for sure.
So let's go on to fruits. Fruits that are usually contaminated happen to be berries and melons. Man, I was disappointed when I came across this.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of berries.
I know.
So hepatitis A is one of the most common pathogens found in both fresh and frozen blackberries, blueberries, strawberries, and raspberries. So generally, berries get contaminated by poor hygiene from pickers, dirty water where they're grown, or just being exposed to other infected berries during the processing. So again, like we talked about earlier, how fast food workers and deli workers, you know, those aren't like the highest paid jobs. Those people can't afford to call in sick. If you're out picking berries, I don't think you've probably had a sick day in your life. Like,
yeah.
That is the worst job in the world.
Yeah. And I guess we've made that point enough a million times, but I doubt they're washing their hands between berries. And if they're sick, like Tom said, they don't really have a choice. They're going to work usually.
Once I read that, I was like, okay, that makes total sense. These guys are picking, I don't know, hundreds, thousands of berries a day.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's going to be some cross contamination. So yeah, that's why berries, and again, berries and melons as well, like fruit in general, is something that we consume raw. So consuming anything raw, you're not cooking it, that high heat isn't going to kill any bacteria. So unless you're washing your berries nice and good, or your fruit in general nice and good, that bacteria is going to stay on there. So that's one thing I have been doing. I've been doing this for the longest time anyway. I was more worried about just like pesticides on my food. So I always spray off like my blueberries like a lot if I'm going to eat them. I've been doing this for a while, so I'm not too scared.
Well, shit, I'd probably be more worried about hepatitis A than pesticides, right?
I know. And like, I buy frozen berries all the time, just like it's a nice little thing to make it a little shake out of.
Yeah.
And I've never sprayed down my frozen berries.
No.
So I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know if I'm just going to stop buying those or what.
I mean, I would probably just roll the dice. You'll probably be fine. But yeah, just seeing hepatitis A, nobody wants that.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So this one I was really surprised with. So cantaloupe, watermelon, and honeydew get contaminated with listeria. That's because it's on the ground, and especially when it comes to cantaloupe, the bacteria can live on the rind, that's the outside of it. So cantaloupe are especially susceptible to it because of its rough exterior. It's really difficult for it to clean, and all those little grooves in there make it kind of like a perfect hiding spot for this listeria to live. So washing fruit, especially like the rinds of melons before you cut it, like, I don't know if people really do that or really even think about doing that, because like, I'm not going to eat it. So why wash it? But yeah, the bacteria can still be there. And if it's coming into other contact with other foods you're eating, like you're on a cutting board, that rind's not the only part of the cutting board that's going to touch it. Like the fleshy part of the cantaloupe is going to touch it too. So there's going to be that cross-contamination from your cutting board.
Yeah, trust me, nobody is washing the outside of cantaloupes. Nobody. Maybe watermelon because it's smooth, but yeah, cantaloupe would be hard to wash and just a hassle. And like, but like you said, if it's on the outside and you use a knife to cut it, which we all do, that puts the outside on the inside with every slice. And yeah, that's how it all gets contaminated.
Yeah, and as soon as the orange part of the cantaloupe touches the cutting board,
there it is.
Now the inside has touched the outside again. Yep. So bam, it's really easy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, wash your fruit. I know I said that 100 times, but this is mostly just a reminder of myself, because I love eating like berries and stuff. So wash them before I eat them, and avoid like pre-cut fruit salads, and eat fruit as soon as it's cut. It's the best way to avoid these illnesses, and it's also just healthier. Like once that fruit's been cut, it's going to go under more oxidation. So it means some of the nutrients in there, it's not like fruit's the most nutrient dense food as is, but a lot of those nutrients are going to start oxidizing and turn into like more of a sugar and less of like a actual like vitamin and stuff like that. So aquatic animals, I mean, this is such a big range because we're talking about tuna, we're talking about clams,
the ocean.
We're talking about the ocean. We're talking about the lakes. We're talking about everything. Some of the issues with aquatic animals is that they're usually contaminated with either histamine or toxins. And what I mean by toxins is just like all the stuff that we've dumped and all the pollution that we've caused to our water sources. So histamine, unfortunately, is not damaged by cooking. So there's not a whole lot you can do to avoid it if you're eating food that's been contaminated with histamine. And like, let's face it, we've done a lot of damage to the water on our planet. So toxins are present everywhere. Algae are usually the first things to get contaminated because they're so small. And then they spread those toxins up the food chains to things like shellfish and other fish, pretty much anything that eats the algae or anything eating the things that eat the algae. So most fish and shellfish in the grocery store is going to be safe to eat. If you are somebody that cooks some shellfish, you know, your clams, your mussels, oysters, cook them until the shells open and then throw away the ones that don't open. If you're a fisherman, this seems like common sense, but don't fish in dirty water. Make sure, you know, you're not fishing right next to some chemical plant or some like sewage dump or where there's a storm drain. If you're planning on catching fish and taking it home and eating, make sure it's from like some cleaner water sources. I don't feel like I should have to say that, but I'm going to anyway.
Oh, shit, man. I wish you would have told me that. I mean, this is a long time ago now, but when I was a kid, I went out with my brother one time fishing in the Delta, the good old Delta. this might have been around, I'm thinking the East Bay. Anyone in the Bay Area knows what I'm talking about. But this water, would you say that water's clean?
There is Dow Chemical, like, right
there. Right there. I mean, it's literally, it's nasty. Yeah, it's nasty water, trust me. And, but whatever, went fishing there. I probably was, like, maybe 11 or 12, and caught a fish, went home, ate the fish, and was sick within an hour. So that's probably one of the last times I actually got food poisoning, was from the Delta.
Yeah, I mean, if you were you somewhere in Antioch?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I can't prove it, but I mean, Dow Chemical's right there. I highly doubt that they're having the cleanest water supply, you know?
Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah. So, I mean, if they're having an impact, it's probably negative, and they're probably getting away with as much as they can.
And I'm sure they are, yeah. And to touch on histamine real quick, I don't know a lot about histamine. Like, there's just histamine intolerance. I know I've talked to a few people out there who really have to watch histamine from food sources. And I think personally, I've looked into it a tiny, tiny bit, but I am ignorant about the whole thing. I do want to do a podcast on it eventually, but it's going to take, you know, just more research and more time. But histamine is, it's very interesting. I think really, it's similar to the gout argument. A lot of people talk about, you know, avoid food that, you know, has a lot of, what is it? It's a uric acid with gout, but what is it? What causes uric acid to rise?
Purines.
Yeah, purines. There you go. And they say, you know, eat foods low in purines, like, you know, meats, even though every study out there shows that eating less meat doesn't really help with gout. And we have a whole podcast on gout to actually find out the real reason behind it. I think histamine is the same thing, but that's just my early impressions on it. But yeah, if you're interested to learn more about histamine, I guess let us know. We'll probably do a podcast on it eventually.
Okay, yeah, I don't know a whole lot about it either. That's why I didn't really go into too much. All right. So the next one is going to be vine stock vegetables. So the reason that this made the list is the same thing as lettuce and berries. These vegetables are often consumed raw, so the pathogens don't get cooked off. Think of, I mean, with like our lettuce example earlier, you're getting a hamburger from McDonald's, you're getting the lettuce, you're getting that tomato. That tomato can be cross-contaminated with that lettuce, or just, you know, like, unless that tomato's been washed nice and clean, or, you know, like, all the other food handling practices that went along with that lettuce, stay the same for this tomato. Again, things like cucumbers, a big way that a lot of people consume cucumbers is either raw or they put them in, like, their drinks. Again, you're not cooking it. So that's another way that these pathogens can spread. So if you are going to eat any produce raw, make sure you wash it. I hope I got that point across by now.
Yeah, wash everything, it sounds like.
Yeah, basically. I mean, don't wash chicken. Because if you do wash chicken, that's a good way to spread that, like, salmonella and that campylobacter kind of, like, all over your kitchen.
Don't want that.
So don't wash that. But, like, everything else, yes, wash.
Yeah, wash for sure.
So those were all, like, the top, like, four or five foods that were on the CDC's list. But I'm just going to kind of give you, like, another, like, others receiving votes list. So eggs is one of them. Mostly these are going to come from eggs that have, like, a cracked shell. I know almost every time I buy eggs in bulk, almost every time I come across one or two that is, like, stuck to the bottom of the carton because the shell's cracked. I always throw those away, even if they don't smell bad. So that's usually going to be, like, how they that's, like, the primary reason that most eggs will get you sick is because if the inside's been exposed, something like that. Again, like, we talked about how chicken's commonly contaminated with salmonella and that campylobacter. The same is true for eggs. So if you are one of those people that likes to be Rocky Balboa and consume your raw eggs, something like that, yeah, you're going to be at risk. Undercooked eggs, I don't know who eats undercooked eggs. I don't know what that means exactly. Because, like, once they start turning, like, a cloudy white, but they're not, like, a solid white, that just seems disgusting to me. Like, I'm a big fan of over-easy eggs, where the white is nice and solid, but the yolk is still runny. Like, that's the way I do it. And from what I understand, that is, like, the best way to do it. Because the white and the pathogens are all cooked off, and you preserve all the nutrients found in that yolk.
Yeah, exactly. That is the best way to do it. And for all the guys out there, I guess ladies too, who are doing raw eggs, thinking it's beneficial, thinking they're digesting it better, you are not. That we've done a podcast on how cooking affects our food. And I looked into the protein digestibility of raw eggs versus cooked eggs, and cooked eggs win every time. So there's really, I don't see any reason to eat raw eggs. I mean, I guess if you like it, but who really likes it? You know, I don't know.
I remember trying it one time, and thank God I was in the kitchen, because I drank the white, and when I got to the time to, like, swallow the yolk, I thought it was disgusting, and I spit it out into a pan, and then just scrambled the eggs.
There you go. I mean, I think it's kind of gross, too, but hey, whatever, it worked.
It was gross, but I mean, I think I was in high school at the time, thinking, I was like, yeah, I can do this. I just watched Rocky, probably one of the Rocky marathons that we're on. Like, oh yeah, I got this. And I was like, nope, no, I don't.
Yeah, I've never tried it myself. I've thought about it, and I know plenty of people like you who have, but there's just don't do it, man. There's no, just cook your eggs, be all right.
Yeah, I mean, there's no real reason to. All right, so the next one on this list I was kind of surprised about was rice. So rice, even like the dry uncooked rice in the bag, can contain B. cereus spores. That's a type of bacteria, and they survive in dry areas. And those spores can even survive the cooking process. So what happens with rice is after you cook it, now these spores are in a warm, moist environment. And you know what loves that type of environment? Mm-hmm. Bacteria does. So if you leave rice that's been, like, after you cook it, after it's been steaming hot, and you just leave it in the rice cooker just sitting out for a long time, that bacteria in there is just having a party and just spreading like crazy. So if you're going to eat rice, eat it right after and then store the rest. Don't leave it sitting out at like a warm temperature for a very long time. And if you do reheat it until it's like steaming hot. You don't want that lukewarm rice.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because one thing you do know about spores, if you remember microbiology, is that spores can survive in a lot of crazy situations. So high heat doesn't really bother a spore. And then you are putting it in the perfect environment. They have the nutrients from the rice that can like to eat. A lot of bacteria do love glucose. I mean, that's pretty much what rice is mostly glucose. So it's like the perfect like growing container for these spores.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I never thought of it that way, but you're right.
So the next one are raw sprouts, like alfalfa, broccoli, mung bean, sunflower. I think like nuts and seeds can fit in this, like raw sprouts as well. So they need a warm, moist environment to grow. And like I just talked about with the rice, bacteria love that same type of environment. So if you consume these foods raw, which is often recommended by like, you know, your plant-based advocates, you're doing a very bad idea. So yeah, if you want to consume these raw sprouts, I don't really know why you'd want to. I mean, if you want to consume these sprouts in general, make sure you cook them before you do it.
What is, what's that lady who does broccoli sprouts? Rhonda Patrick?
I know she's big on broccoli. I wasn't sure if she does broccoli sprouts, but yeah, that makes sense.
I think it is broccoli sprouts, because I think broccoli sprouts are higher in, she likes something called sulforaphane, and, but I don't remember if she recommends cooking it or not, but I bet she doesn't, because I bet cooking lower sulforaphane, even though in my opinion you'd want that lower, but I bet she's out there recommending raw broccoli sprouts a lot.
Didn't she recommend raw broccoli in general?
And I think it was raw broccoli in general, because I think I started doing raw broccoli.
I remember, yeah, you did that, and you tried to get me to do that, yeah. And I tried it like once and thought it was disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, at that time in my life, I was like, wannabe bodybuilder, I would have done anything to grow. So chewing on broccoli like a rabbit wasn't a problem, but it was something that didn't last long. And once I educated myself on actual nutrition, I realized how dumb it was.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking like, what, 6-7 years ago? It was a long time
ago. It was a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah. So pretty much to summarize, if you want to avoid food illness, I mean, just use common sense. Practice like clean personal hygiene. Like that's first off, make sure your hands are clean if you're going to be handling food. Wash your food. Want to make sure I get that point across too. Because if somebody like dirty or just like dirty water that your food was grown in, like you want to make sure you wash off all that junk and then cook your food. That heat kills pathogens for a reason. And don't use the same objects with raw meat that you're going to be using with the rest of your food, like cutting boards, knives, stuff like that. I feel like most of this is common sense, but apparently it's not, because a lot of people do get some sort of foodborne illness throughout the year.
Yeah, I think you're right. It should be common sense. And for most of us, it is. But a lot of the times, you know, you're tired. You're trying to do things quick. You're trying to cut corners. We can't see bacteria. We can't see viruses. So, you know, you wipe down a cabinet with a paper towel real quick. Hey, it's good enough. You know what I mean? But it's really important to deep clean and just be thorough if you can.
Yeah, and one thing I did want to point out is most of the foods on this list, the reason that they're like the top causes for foodborne illnesses is because of human impact. It has nothing to do with pretty much the food itself. I mean, like things that live a very natural lifestyle, things like beef for the most part, lamb, bison. I didn't see any of those even close to the list. Things like chicken. Chicken lives in the most unnatural lifestyle imaginable. Growing all these foods in just, it's pretty much just poop water, because they need the fertilizer to do them. Mm-hmm. That's not natural either. What we've done to our water systems is not natural with all the toxins in there. So a lot of this has to do with like our own human impact that we've had. So if you're eating food that's grown in a natural way, you getting your pasture raised chickens, your pasture raised chicken eggs, your 100% grass fed beef. I mean, pretty much any beef because it's like 90% grass-fed anyway, if you're consuming foods that live like a natural lifestyle, it doesn't seem like you really need to worry about any of this.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think that you touched on chicken, even something like lettuce. I think part of it's a numbers game as well. If you think of how popular chicken is, how popular lettuce is, of course they're going to be higher on the list just because of how often they're consumed, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's a great point. I didn't even really think about that. Because, yeah, lettuce is consumed. Like, pretty much, you get a burger, you get a chicken sandwich.
Any salad.
Even a deli sandwich. Yeah. Like, yeah, the lettuce is everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. So, and people think, like, chicken is, like, the golden meat. Like, you know, it's the healthiest thing out there. If you're a bodybuilder, eat chicken breasts every day. That's not true. But it's just, you know, people eat that stuff every day.
But so, yeah, I wasn't even thinking about the numbers game. But, yeah, that makes total sense, too.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So, yeah, that's another podcast in the books. Hope you guys liked it. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. So, feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. You can find us pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.